Okay, so we're back at our second class on Rashi, and you have an all Hebrew text, so you're going to practice your Hebrew tonight, but it's not too difficult. But I want to just touch back on one thing we said last week, and then we're going to get back as a way of introduction, and then we're going to get back into Rashi. So last week I gave you a handout with the Ramban's introduction to the Torah, where the Ramban speaks of Rashi in such high regard. In fact, all of the Ramban's commentary we mentioned, is almost all of it is based on Rashi. It's based on Rashi's approach to the Chumash. You know, we could be Christian critics of text, and we could study the Chumash, you know, for its academic value or something like that. But when we study Rashi, we are approaching the Torah text in a, I don't want to use the word traditional, but in the way our tradition that was passed down generation after generation, that was cared for and documented so carefully, that's the sort of approach that Rashi takes to the text. And I wanted to just embellish on one point. The Ramban called Rashi like the pure menorah. We know when Moshe Rabbeinu was studying Torah from Hashem, so Hashem gave him breaks in between the portions that he would study to reflect on what he studied and to understand deeper insights into what he studied. And the Midrash teaches that Moshe Rabbeinu would go and stand in front of the menorah, and he would gaze at the light of the menorah, and from the light of the menorah would shine a light that wasn't just a physical light, but actually being in the presence of the menorah inspired Moshe Rabbeinu to have a deeper understanding of the Torah. And I believe that that's what the Ramban means when he says that Rashi resembles, or Rashi is likened to the pure menorah. He's referring to that aspect of the menorah. The menorah, of course, is the candelabra that stood in the tabernacle of the Mishkan, in the Beit HaMikdash. So when we approach Rashi, when we're studying Rashi, when we are in front of Rashi's text, if you will, in front of Rashi's approach to the Chumash, whatever Rashi you learn, not just in this class, whenever you study Rashi on Chumash, that's what Rashi is like. It's standing in front of the Mesorah and saying, like, sort of, inspire me, teach me how to look at the figures in the Torah, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah, and everyone else in the Torah. Teach me how to look at the story. And basically, it's a way of becoming inspired. So the Ramban is hinting, perhaps, to the fact that if we meditate on what Rashi is saying, if you will, if we actually take it, understand, that there's something to reflect and contemplate, it's not superficial, then we'll get a deeper and deeper understanding into the Torah. We mentioned, just very briefly, we mentioned that there are more than 100 commentaries on Rashi on the Torah. So they're not all analyzing every word in Rashi, and why did Rashi write this and not this, although many do that. Many great commentaries do that. You know, the greats of Jewish history, the ones that wrote it, like, involved in writing Halakha, the Code of Jewish Law, are writing commentaries on Rashi. That's how paramount Rashi's commentary is. But also to understand deeper into Rashi. Not only to get technical, but to understand the spirit of Rashi. We'll see a little bit now that some of what Rashi says, if we sort of try to take a dive into the pool, when Rashi's about to say, so if we go a little deeper, it actually falls into Kabbalah. Like, when you take the next leap beyond the depth that you can perceive in Rashi, you understand Rashi properly, you can go even deeper into the real secrets of the Torah. They're just on the cusp of where Rashi is going many times. Because Rashi's quoting the Midrash, which is just outside of the secrets of the Torah, the depth of the ideas of the Torah. So that a fitting introduction into the greatness of Rashi. So we're going to learn two Rashis tonight. That's our goal. That's our noble objective tonight. We're going to learn two Rashis, and I could not help but learn the first Rashi on the Parsha. because it is such a famous Rashi. But before we actually do that, if you haven't studied the first Rashi on the Parsha, great. Because I want you to try to see if you can see some difficulties in the pasuk, and then we can try to see what sort of questions would even a child ask on a pasuk. And certainly us, with our technical skills, we can go a little further. Whether it's Hebrew or English doesn't really matter, because the question is the technical skills of looking at a text and trying to understand it. And that's where it starts. It's amazing. By the way, just one more thing, I'm sorry. One more thing is that it's exactly like the way life is, you know? It's like life. Studying text and Rashi and going deeper is like life. Because the way you grow in Yiddishkeit, the way you grow as a person, is by taking small steps that are sometimes very technical. You know, you have to live in the right place, you have to find the right job, you have to find the right location, you have to sort of, there's all these technical things that need to be in place in order for us to bloom and to flourish. That's kind of what you do with the pasuk. And then you start to see the landscape, if you will. Then you start to absorb, okay, what does Hashem want from me? You know, my mind is settled, I have this, now I can start reflecting. That's when you like get into Rashi. And then you can go even deeper. And that's really how the study of text is. Much like the way we try to grow on a personal level as well. So, here we are, trying to struggle with the text. We're in the first pasuk of the Torah, and in this week's parsha. So we're on the first page, at the top of the letter Aleph. And the Torah begins this week's parsha, Sarah passes away. Sarah Yimenu passes away. And the Torah begins with the first pasuk telling us, Vayihiyu chayei Sarah. And they were the lives of Sarah. Chayei Sarah, the lives of Sarah, in plural. Me'ashana, 100 years. We're on the second line where it says the Aleph. Me'ashana, 100 years. Ve'esrim shana, and 20 years. V'sheva shanim, and 7 years. Shenei chayei Sarah. These were the lives of Sarah. These were the years of Sarah's life. Pasuk bet. Vatamas Sarah b'kiryat Arba. Sarah died in Kiryat Arba. Hi Hebron. It is Hebron. It's the city of Hebron. Be'eretz Canaan, in the land of Canaan. So Kiryat Arba is the city of Hebron. That's not where Avram and Sarah lived, believe it or not. Avram and Sarah were living in Be'er Sheva, like it says in the Torah. But Sarah died in Hebron. Vayavo Abraham, when the third line where it says the bet, underneath that third line, Vayavo Abraham, Abraham arrived, lispot l'Sarah, to eulogize to Sarah, Belivkota, and to cry over her, basically to sit like a Shiva for 7 days after the loss of Sarah. So he eulogized her, he cried for her, and the Torah goes on to tell about the story of the purchase of the famous Maras HaMachpelah, the burial place of Sarah. So we want to focus on the first pasuk. Okay, going back there to the first pasuk. Aleph. So we want to come up with some difficulties with the text. And we'll translate the pasuk one more time. And then let's look at some basic difficulties, some maybe deeper difficulties with the text. The Torah is telling us that Sarah died. This is a very important person in the Torah, Sarah Imenu, the wife of Avram Avinu, the matriarch of the Jewish people. And how does it tell us about her death? Vayihiyu chayei Sarah. And these were the lives of Sarah. Me'ashana, 100 years. Vesrim shana, in 20 years. V'sheva shanim, in 7 years. Shenei chayei Sarah. What is difficult about this introduction to Sarah's death, or departure, or what is difficult about this? Basic questions. Yeah.
Why doesn't the pasuk just say 127 years, and it goes and separates 120 and 7?
Okay.
Why the extra seven?
Famous question?
No.
No? But you agree with that question?
Isn't it sort of an extra seven?
Okay.
120 years is a very traditional number.
Right.
And there it's the seven.
And she lived at 127. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So we have two questions on the text. And, firstly, that her years are interesting. She lived 127 years. So the truth is that we know that in Torah times, back in biblical times, like with Avraham Avinu, for example, lived 175 years, and now he was considered a youngster. I mean, Noah was 600 when the flood began. So I mean, in those days, they actually lived much longer, up until the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. And from the time the Torah was given and onward, they lived shorter lives. So it is unusual that 127 is unusual, but it's not unusual that she lived more than 120 years. Okay. I just wanted to address your question. So you're saying, Leah, that every time the Torah says what? The Torah is saying 100 mea shana. And what's it saying? What's the question that you're asking?
And 20 years and 7 years, like it breaks it down.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Why not say it all mer esrim v'sheva?
Okay. Okay.
Right. Without the shana.
Okay. So that's a very that is one of the most classic questions on the pasuk. That is Rashi's question, a very basic question on the pasuk. Why is the Torah repeating the word shana? So that's great. We don't have to just ask Rashi's question. There could be other questions as well, but what's grounded in the text? What's another question in the text?
Well, why does he not call the teacher?
No, don't call
him.
Like
a student.
Oh, okay, fine. She won't call the teacher.
Let my student. Yes.
Donnie?
It seems like Chaye Sarah is repeated too.
Okay. So we have Vayu Chaye Sarah, and then we have Shnei Chaye Sarah. So the repetition of Chaye Sarah. Why is that? Why don't you just say, either start off, Vayucha Yisara, you say the question. Well,
why don't you say Vayucha Yisara 127 years? Period. Done.
Right.
Why does that say all the years, and this is the life of Sarah?
Right. That's also Rashi's question. We're not going to deal with that Rashi directly tonight, but Rashi also asked that question. That's another very basic, grounded question in the pasuk, the repetition of Chaye Sarah. Anything else?
Yeah. This isn't really a text question, but it's like, I don't know if it's that she is held in such high esteem, but the first thing that came to mind I was thinking is, there's no beginning chapter of Abraham telling about his lives, or Yitzhak, or Yaakov, the way it does Sarah. Like, it's starting off the whole pasuk talking about Chaye Sarah. You'd think, like, they would say Ve'yihyu Chaye Abraham or Chaye Yitzhak or Yaakov. Like, because we're always in our prayers and everything. So I'm just wondering how that the whole pasuk is, like, devoted to her.
Beautiful.
As opposed to that, maybe have a section for Abraham and for Yitzhak and Yaakov.
Mm-hmm.
Too.
Mm-hmm.
They don't do that though in
Torah. Mm-hmm.
But she's singled out to have that special pasuk.
So you're saying that we see that Sarah has a whole special pasuk to her about how long she lived and her life, like her legacy, if you will.
Yeah.
Right? Where the truth is that if you look through the Torah, you'll find like Eile Shnei Chaye Avram, these are the years of Avram. This is how long Yishmael lived, this is how Yitzchak lived. So we'll say something like that. But there is definitely prominence to the fact, we know the chapters were not divided, they're not a Jewish division, the allocation of chapters. But the allocation of Parshios is a Jewish division. It's our Mesorah, it's our tradition on how to divide the Chumash into Parshas. So the fact that the Parsha begins with Chaye Sarah, the life of, you don't have a parsha called Chaye Abraham or Chaye Moshe, right? So the fact that Sarah is such prominent, that's very significant. In fact, the Zohar actually points out as well that Sarah is the only one where it says that the word that there's an emphasis on that there's an emphasis on Chaye Sarah, like this is the life of Sarah. We find these are the years that the person lived. We don't find this is the life of, like, the life of the person. That emphasis of Chaye Sarah, that she lived this life. Okay. Any more questions or any more? I'll throw something else in that I actually thought about tonight that was troubling me, and I didn't think about it, you know, much before when I studied Rashi or the Pasuk earlier, is that it's an odd thing to emphasize, you know, that to emphasize the years that Sarah lived as her legacy. Like, you know, her acts or deeds. I mean, like, we find the story of Noah, for example, right? So we know the parsha of Noah starts with Noah was a righteous person, and so on. It talks about his righteousness, you know. But to emphasize the legacy of the person, it sounds like it's a legacy of Sarah. Now we do find other places where the Torah is talking about the years of Abraham and so on, but we don't. To be dramatic about the death of Sarah by sharing her age with us is a strange sort of legacy to leave.
Plus, it's rude.
Never tell them his age.
Women breaking don't usually like to tell their age.
Well, this was after her death.
Before.
So.
In modern women, you know, they don't like to tell their age.
Okay, so these are all excellent questions. So we're going to go see Rashi together. Rashi, of course, is going to focus on the main question of the Pasuk, which I think we would all agree is like the main phrase of the Pasuk. Me'a shana ve'esrim shana v'sheva shanim. Why the repetition of the words shana each time? And all the other questions are also fantastic questions. I've wanted to focus on the main phrase of the Pasuk. Okay, so right below you have the Rashi, right below. Now, sometimes you come onto a Rashi, and Rashi's easy to understand and straightforward, and you can move on. Sometimes Rashi itself raises a question, which just doesn't, like, Rashi doesn't seem to make much sense. So what is Rashi saying? This is a difficult Rashi. Also, sometimes you come upon Rashi, where Rashi presents his question. Rashi will say, why does it say da-da-da-da-da, an extra word or something like that? Sometimes Rashi will come and tell you off the bat, this is why it says it. This is why it says it. And he tells you, like, from a source, he tells you this is why it says it. That means that Rashi sometimes will be coming to teach us something there's something deeper over here. It's not just a textual question. Why does it say such and such? A technicality. But sometimes it's an opportunity for Rashi to share with us something grander. Okay? Well, let's see what that is. First line in Rashi, and I have the lines numbered 1 through 11. Okay? Like you pointed out, we have some of the Rashi letters. Most Rashi letters are the same. Malka pointed out that, like, the Rashi letter Shin and Aleph are different than the regular letters, but all the other letters are regular. Okay, let's look at this Rashi. Says Rashi, Vayu Chaye Sarah Me'ashana Ve'Swim Shana V'Sheva Shanim. Rashi's title, line 1. Line 2. Lekach Nichtav Shana. This is why it says the word Shana. Line 3. Bechol Klal Uklal. With every grouping of years, it says the word Shana. Why? Line 4. Lo Marlach. To tell you. Line 5. Shekol Echad Nidrash Le'atzmo. That's a tzadi. Okay? Different than the regular tzadi in Hebrew. Shekol Echad Nidrash Le'atzmo. To teach you, each one is expounded upon on its own. Each one has a message of its own that we're going to learn from the grouping. So the Torah wants to emphasize 100 years, that's one group. 20 years, that's a different group. 7 years, that's a different group. And then we're going to compare one to the other. Each one stands independently. It wasn't just a stream of 127 years. There was some significance to 100, to 20, and to 7. How is that? Line 6. Bat Kuf Kivat Chaf. For those of us who are familiar with Gematria, with the numerical value of letters, Kuf is 100, Chaf is 20. Because when you count Aleph through Yud, Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Dalet, Hey, Vav, Zayin, Chet, Tet, Yud, that's 10, and then you go into the tens. Yud is 10, Chaf is 20, Lamed, Mem, Nun, Samech, Ayin, Pei, Tzadi, Kuf. Then you hit 100, and then you go into the hundreds. Kuf, Resh, Shin, Taf. So the alphabet goes from 1 to 10, 10 to 100, 100 to 400. Okay? So the letters Kuf is 100, Chaf is 20. So it says Rashi, line 6, Bat Kuf Kivat Chaf. When she was 100, that's to be compared to like when she was 20. For what? Line 7, L'chait, for sin. That what? Line 8, Ma Bat Chaf Lo Chat'ah. Just as a 20-year-old, an age of 20, she had not sinned. Why has she not sinned? Of course Sarah didn't sin. Are we going to suspect Sarah Imenu of sinning? Line 9, no. Sheharei eina bat onshim. She's not liable for divine punishment. Because she's only 20, she's not liable for divine punishment. What does that mean? What that means is, we know. Does anyone know what this means? That when you're 20,
that she's still youthful in her ways and hasn't kind of gotten a sense of perspective on life, so she can sin easily because she didn't understand things properly or have that deeper wisdom of age to know right around at that level.
Right. So when she's so when you're under 20. You're not liable for your actions.
It's good to know.
It's good to know, yeah. You're not liable for your actions divinely at all when you're under 20. Once you hit 20, then you are now, if you are aware of a matter, of a situation, then Hashem is now going to begin holding you accountable for your actions.
But what about the bar mitzvah, though? I thought that was the change over then when you have your bar mitzvah.
Right. So when you're bar mitzvah...
Or is this women only till 20?
No. Men and women at the age of 20. Because at the age of bar mitzvah or bat mitzvah, that's when you are considered a member of the community as an adult. Mm-hmm. And that's when you are responsible to observe mitzvot. And below, down here, Beit Din can already, take you to task for infringing on Torah law. But divinely, you're not held accountable until you're 20 years old. Okay? So continuing in Rashi. So just like when she was 100, she was like 20. Because when she was 20, how is it? What's unique about 20? 20 is that age when there's no punishment. Line 10. Af baf bat kuf below chait. So too when she was 100, she's without sin. So we're comparing her age of 100 to her age of 20. Just like when she was 20, she was like without sin, because she's not held accountable. So too when she's 100, she's also without sin. Last line. And how are we comparing 20 and 7? Comparing 100 and 20. How are we comparing 20 and 7? Ubat chaf kibat zayin liyofi. And when she was 20, she's like a 7-year-old for beauty. Liofi, for beauty. So basically what Rashi is saying is, in other words, Rashi's saying that the reason the Shana is there for each one of the sections is in order to praise Sarah. And to emphasize that when she was 100, she was free of sin. And when she was 20, she was as beautiful as she was when she was 7.
I found that strange.
Why?
The 20 to 7?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, you don't equate a 20-year-old as being, I could say maybe a 60-year-old to a 7-year-old, but at 20, you're not old enough to compare. You're not aged to compare to a 7-year-old.
Mm-hmm. So what does Rashi mean by 20 and 7? How could that... What was he comparing?
Innocence.
It's not so beauty.
Not beauty, but he's saying beauty.
But that would be beauty in another sense.
In another sense.
Yeah, maybe innocence.
In innocence?
Yes. At one age, she was innocent, like 7 years old, child.
Okay, so that your question, Donnie, begs the retranslation of Rashi. The yofi here means this beauty means innocence, right?
Inside
that means an inner beauty, some kind of inner beauty. Mm-hmm. So, but I'm still not perfectly comfortable with Rashi. But basically, what Rashi is saying is it's kind of like it's a little bit of a stutter, if you will. It's like, when she was 100, she was like 20 because she didn't have sin. And well, we didn't get that point across too well, so we mean sin without innocence. I mean, it's a little bit of a broken phrase. You know, she was, but that's what Rashi seems to be saying. Rashi is saying that she's one, when she was 100, she was like 20. When she was 20, she was like 7. Which means that when she was 127, she always had these qualities of being free of sin and innocent. So in that sense, we answered some of our questions. Why does the Torah begin with speaking of her age? Well, it's not speaking of her age, really. It's true, it's speaking of her age, but it's really emphasizing.
It's
comparison,
right?
It's
the catalyst to kind of bring you into these attributes. So it's not really about the age, it's the, where she's at or what.
Right, so her inner beauty, her innocence, and so on. And that's what the Torah is emphasizing. This Rashi, though, is difficult, because there's another Rashi elsewhere that says that before the Torah was given, you weren't punishable by heaven until you were 100 years old. Mm-hmm. Not 20. Rashi elsewhere says that you would be 100 years old before the Torah was given. It was at the age of 100, and so that's a difficulty with this Rashi. That's one difficulty with this Rashi. So twenty then is a number that means something to us today, because 20 is when we're relevant to divine punishment. But in her times, in Sarah's times, 20 wasn't a particularly specific number relevant to punishment, because it was more 100, which makes a difficulty in the text. Why are you comparing 100 to 20 if 20 wasn't a matter of when you were free of sin?
Maybe beauty. At 100, she was beautiful, like 20 years old.
Like 20. Mm-hmm. So Rashi's comparing it in the matter of 100 to 20 in terms of sin, right? In terms of Avera. So, but 20 compared to 7 in terms of beauty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
I understand.
Okay, so this is a Rashi. So what do? We took the text. We saw the words that are difficult. We saw Rashi. We see how Rashi says that it's 100 to 20 to 7. And what we emphasize here is that we're looking at the attributes of Sara Imenu, that her years somehow reflect her attributes. And those attributes are what? The attributes of innocence, the attributes of free of sin. Does that now answer Donnie's question? Why does it say Chaye Sarah twice in the Pasuk? Why would it say Chaye Sarah? This is the life of Sarah. Donnie, you asked that question, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe we can draw out now from this Rashi as well the repetition of the life of Sarah. The Torah wants to emphasize that she was like a life source. Mm-hmm. She had no sin. She was innocent. And her life was more than just a life. It had a purity to it. That's what the Torah is emphasizing. Vayuchaye Sarah. This was the life of Sarah. This was the purity of Sarah. That she was totally free of any hint of sin. She was totally innocent.
Maybe she had like two lives. Maybe she had, you know, a life with Abraham and a life separate from Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
How do you see that?
No, I just was...
You're thinking of
it.
Well, yeah. Just, you know, like, because you know that the Torah doesn't repeat things. So maybe her life with Abraham was special,
mm-hmm.
and her life without Abraham stood on its own.
Mm-hmm. So it seems like there's a duality to Sarah's life.
I mean, she's, let's see, when we pray, we say, Abraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel. She's the first matriarch,
mm-hmm.
right, about,
mm-hmm.
you know, that people look up to.
Mm-hmm.
So, she needs to be mentioned twice because of, I don't know, it doesn't go into specifically what she's done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but we know from the past Torah that she was a very good helper to Abraham, and she worked together side by side with him,
mm-hmm.
and with all their endeavors and their journeys, she was, well, except for the time with Hagar, actually.
Right. Right. Where
she disagreed with Abraham.
And what happened over there? She disagreed
with
Abraham.
She sent Hagar away.
And what was Abraham supposed to do in that case?
Send Hagar away, but he probably didn't want to send her away, really, because he loved Hagar,
mm-hmm.
he loved Ishmael.
Mm-hmm. We find that Sarah, throughout the Torah, when we reflect on who Sarah was as a person, you find throughout the Torah that, and Rashi actually says this, that Sarah had a higher understanding of Ruach HaKodesh than Avraham Avinu. Sarah, there is something, like you're pointing out, that there is something that's a duality about Sarah, that's beyond Abraham, like you've said, and there is a duality to Sarah. And what the Zohar points out, for example, I said earlier, that the Zohar says that the only one where it says Chaye somebody, Vayu Chaye, these were the lives of, it's an emphasis by Sarah specifically. Sarah's considered like if you will, like Chava, was the mother of all living creatures. Sarah is the life source, that purity. It's so important to emphasize with Sarah, because she's the mother of like all of Am Yisrael, and of all of the continuation of Am Yisrael. So, when we are reflecting in front of the menorah of Rashi, right, trying to be inspired by the Parsha, right? So this is something, Rashi's intention over here is not just to tell us the simple pshat of the pasuk, the simple understanding of the verse over here, but to share with us some deeper insight into understanding Sarah. And we're not going to go Kabbalistic, but when you try to understand what Sarah is about, then you see that Sarah is this purity that began on Yisrael. That it's higher than Avraham Avinu, and it's that purity. So, if your name is Sarah, if you want to get into the Parsha because it's Chayei Sarah, but what you can connect with in the Parsha is that purity that was a loss at this Parsha, that Avraham Avinu lost. When we actually experience the Parsha every Shabbos, and it's not just... Rabbi Moshe Chaim Lutzato says in his book, Derech Hashem, that when we read the Torah, all the influences that are read in the Parsha actually influence the Jewish people. We go through it again. So in this Parsha, we lose Sarah Imenu. It's not that she died, you know, 3,500 years ago and, you know, reading about it. But Am Yisrael, this week's Parsha, loses Sarah Imenu. What have we lost in this Parsha? What does Am Yisrael lose?
My mother.
Ooh, I'm sorry?
My
Their mother, that is this, these attributes that we're describing, right? The purity. That's what we're losing. So that's a little bit of like an experiential. I try and take Rashi to the next level, that reflective level, if you will. If somehow you connect with this, I know it sounds a little bit, if somehow you connect with this on this Shabbos, when you're reading the parsha, you're talking about the parsha, you're hearing the parsha, this is something that is unique to this Shabbos, the Shabbos of Chayei Sarah, is the loss of Sari Menu, that loss of that higher level of purity that accompanied Avraham Avinu. That's something that...
Rabbi Jason, when you say we lost, you know, Sari Menu, is it, you say though that these attributes are not carried on through us though? Now that we cannot emulate these same things, but they're gone with Sari Menu. We can never have a woman as, you know, beautiful and loyal. I mean, that's what I feel like. I'm gone.
Whenever there's a loss, until now we have Avram and Sarah with us, if you will. Mm-hmm. Avram and Sarah, we started the new year, we're reading the Torah. Avram and Sarah, if you will, are with the Jewish people. Their influence is being felt as though they're present with the Jewish people. And the Jewish people are with the Parsha. The Parsha is influencing them. With the loss of Sarah, we have to take an opportunity to gain from her loss. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's not, in a sense, she's not present. I'm talking on a different level. I'm not talking on a level that, obviously, Sari Menu's, you know, genes are in, it's, you know, in our blood, her purity, her modesty, all of the midos of Sari Menu. However, at the time when she's no longer, like, present with the Jewish people in the Parsha, she's now lost in the Parsha, so then we need to know what she's about so that we can connect with those things and try to bring those out. That's connecting with the Parsha. That is connecting with the Parsha. Connecting with the Parsha is understanding the for in this context, understanding Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, understanding the Imahos, and drawing out, understanding them and drawing out those midos. And understanding that they're not present. We have now the responsibility is passed down to us. They're not here anymore, in a sense. They're not in the parsha anymore. Sari Menu's modesty and purity has to be handed down to us.
Maybe that's the double Chayei Sarah. You know, it's her life during her life, and it's that life continues, you know, later on. Mm-hmm. Through the lives of, you know, the other generations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, should we move on to one more Rashi? We have a few more minutes. Okay, so here we have four psukim. I especially wanted to share, this is the conversation that's taking place. We know that Eliezer went to find a wife for Yitzchak, and he came upon Rivka, and he gets to the house of Rivka, and he tells him the whole story, and he sleeps overnight, and in the morning it's about time to leave, and they don't want to part with her. They want her to stay. Okay? Just because we just came off of these mystical, spiritual comments on the previous Rashi, so let me emphasize that Laban, Betuel, the whole family of Rivka, are what's trying to draw away the Kedusha from Avraham Avinu. Eliezer, this turned into a Zohar class. Eliezer is now going as a messenger from the Kedusha of Avraham Avinu to find a mate from, if you will, from the other side that's not Kedusha, to draw that out and bring it and connect with it in the Kedusha and make it holy and show that there's a spark of holiness in everything. That's what Eliezer is about. So Eliezer is about to part away from Laban and Betuel. And as he's about to do that, they resist. They say she's not leaving. So this is the conversation. We're not going to go through all the psukim because we're short on time. But we will look at the last pasuk, Nun Chet. So this is in Perek Chaf Dalid, Pasuk Nun Chet. Vayikra'u li Rivka, we're on page 2 at the bottom. And they called Rivka. Vayomru eleha, they said to her, Hatilchi im ha'ish hazeh, will you go with this man? Vatomer eilech. And here she says, I will go. And then the next verses basically say that they gave her a blessing, and then she leaves. And she goes, and she rides on the camels, and she's going back to Yitzhak and Avram. I want to draw your attention to Rashi. Look at the last Rashi on page 3. This is Rashi's comment to the verse. So they asked her, do you want to go with this man? And she says, yes, I will go. Look at the last Rashi. You want to read Rashi first?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Mayatzvi.
Well, please read the Dibra.
I'm sorry, Vatomer ilev, mayatzvi, va'av, imen chenutzi. So she said, I will go on my own, and even if you don't want me to go, I'm still going.
Right. So she says, I will go, mayatzmi, I'll go on my own. You don't even have to ask me, am I going, convince me to go or not. I will initiate on my own that I'm going. You don't even have to bring it to me. I'm going to initiate on my own. And even if you don't want me to go. Now the question is, where, obviously this is from the Midrash. Rashi's not inventing this. We've already mentioned that Rashi draws on earlier sources. Where does Rashi get the it's true, they resisted, they didn't want her to go, they said, maybe you don't want to go, and so on. But they simply asked her, do you want to go with this man? And she said, I'm going to go. Now Rashi reads into those words that she says, I'm going whether you like it or not. I'm out of here. You know, that's what she said. She marched out. She said, I'm going. And they said, wait, we want to bless you before you go. And she's like, she's out of there. You know, the camels are already, it's dust on the way. So, where does Rashi get that from? I saw a beautiful comment in how to read the Pasuk. Look back on the bottom of page 2. They did ask her, so you'll notice, Vayikru'u l'Rivka, they called Rivka, Vayomru leha, they say to her, Hatelchi im ha'ish hazeh, will you go with this man? Normally in the Torah, whenever a question is asked, this way or that way, we say, the Torah will offer a question and will say, this or not? So it should have said, Hatelchi im ha'ish hazeh, im lo, will you go with this man, or won't you go with this man? Yes or no? So Rashi's looking at the Pasuk and he's saying, there's some words missing in this Pasuk. Whenever a question is asked with two options in the Torah, throughout the Torah, there's always, will you this or not? Always there's this double statement. That's biblical language. Here it's missing. So explain the commentaries on Rashi, they say, Rashi did not read the verse that way. This is how Rashi reads the Pasuk. Vayikru l'Rivka, they called Rivka, Vayomru leha, they said to her, Hatelchi, Ma'isha, Zeh? You're going to go with this guy? And she says, Eilech, I will go. Meaning, Rashi understands, that their question was a sense of absurdity, and that they were resisting through their question. It wasn't just, are you going to go? Yes or no? And she says, I'm going to go. No, Rashi understands, we see from this Rashi, Rashi understands that the word's missing in the Pasuk. And they said, you're going to go with this guy? And she says, I'm going. Meaning, I'm going to go on my own, whether you like it or not. Right?
Because they implied that they didn't.
They implied that they did not want her to go. So Rashi got that commentary.
It was a true question.
Right. It was more of a rhetorical question. And she said, yes, I'm going. Uh-huh. You know?
They had an answer in mind by stating.
Right.
So here, I'm drawing to a close, Donnie.
Who?
So, yeah.
Who is it? Who's
yeah.
That they called her. Right?
Yeah, these so are. This is actually Rivka's brother, Lava, and her mother. Because Rashi says earlier that her father is missing from the story all of a sudden. Rashi explains that he wanted to oppose the whole thing. He was going to stand up against it and not let her go. They were the weaker parts of the narrative, and they said, "You're going to go with this guy?" And she says, yes, I'm going, whether you like it or not. But if he would have been alive, if the father would have been alive, the Tuel, then he would have resisted and not allowed her to go, period. Mm-hmm. So that's who's speaking over here. I want to draw to a close and just bring this also to a little bit of a deeper point in what we just said. So we take a look at how everything weaves together so beautifully. Please notice this. We lose Sarah Imenu in this parsha, which means there's a loss of purity, there's a loss of that source of life, which was free of sin, which was pure and so on. Eliezer is now going to find a wife. He's going to the filthiest, you know, place, back to Avram's home. They're full of idolatry and everything like that. Avodah Zarah, just finishing Avodah Zarah. That's what they were full of, Avodah Zarah. And he's going to pull out this young woman, Rivka, and he's going to bring her home, and she, and they are trying to stop her, and things are, the purity is coming out, if you will. It's kind of like a shell. The father died. The brother and the mother of Rivka are still resisting, but they don't have a grasp on her like the father did. And Rivka says, yes, I'm going to go. And in fact, the Parsha ends, as we all know, the Parsha ends with Rivka coming and marrying Yitzchak, and that purity, that sense of Sarah, returns. Mm-hmm. So at the beginning of the Parsha, there's a loss, and here we see, if you sort of peer into the way Rashi understands the story, is that there was a resistance, and they were like, this is absurd, because they totally opposed the Kedusha, the sanctity of Avraham Avinu. And by Rivka demonstrates, I will go. Those are critical words. Those words say, I'm not part of you, I'm part of, you know, Avraham Avinu and that Kedusha. And in a sense, that spirit of Sarah Imenu is rekindled. And brought back to Avram's home.